Hello and welcome to COVIDcast, a weekly Lowy Institute podcast for anyone interested in understanding the effect of coronavirus on global politics and international life. My name is Natasha Kassam, and I'm a research fellow here in the Diplomacy and Public Opinion Program at the Lowy Institute in Sydney, Australia. As this crisis unfolds, we are sitting down every week with experts from a range of fields to discuss the implications of coronavirus for the world. You'll find all the previous episodes of COVIDcast on the homepage of our website or wherever you get your podcasts. Since the coronavirus, known as COVID-19, became known to the world at the beginning of 2020, the World Health Organization has been the subject of scrutiny. World Health Organization officials and the leader, Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus, has been criticized for praising China's response to the pandemic, for excluding Taiwan from its deliberations, and most recently, US President Donald Trump announced a freeze on the funding for the organization. To make sense of all of this, what is the World Health Organization for? What can it do and what can't it do? In this episode, I'll be speaking to Professor Joel Negin. Joel has been the head of the School of Public Health at the University of Sydney since 2015. He maintains collaborations in Uganda, Vietnam, Indonesia, and Fiji, and is strongly engaged in capacity building in the Asia-Pacific region. Thank you, Joel, for joining me here today.
Thank you very much, Natasha.
I think we can start today with the most recent announcement. On the 24th of February, the US President Donald Trump tweeted that the World Health Organization had been working hard and had been very smart. We fast forward to the 14th of April and he announces he's halting funding of the organization while a review is conducted into its so-called mismanagement of the COVID-19 outbreak. Could you talk to us a little bit about the context for President Trump's actions?
Well, I think President Trump's actions are primarily intended to distract us from examining the American response to COVID-19, which, to be blunt, has been very poor. There's been a massive outbreak in the US that has been essentially led, or has been created by fights between the federal government and various state governments, by a very poor initial testing regime, a very poor series of decisions in terms of travelers and quarantining and isolation. And as the death rates escalate in New York City, in New Jersey, in Detroit, in New Orleans, Donald Trump is looking to distract the global community. And there's a very long American tradition and tradition elsewhere as well of distracting domestic populations by blaming the bogeyman of the UN system or the global system. And in this case, it's the World Health Organization that is getting blamed. So the primary point here is that this is just distracting us. And it turns out has been incredibly successful in that lots of us have been distracted by it and have been defending the WHO and writing opinion pieces. And now even this podcast to talk about the WHO. So he's been very successful in his look over there strategy. A lot of us are looking over there right now.
It does seem to me, however, that lots of people are very critical of this strategy, even if it is working on some level. But it's also drawing attention to the way that Donald Trump has been undermining a number of global institutions. And so I wanted to ask you on a practical level, is the World Health Organization for countries like Australia and the United States? And what is the purpose that it's set up to serve?
In a situation like this, countries like Australia, the US, the UK, which have huge numbers of epidemiologists and public health thinkers and doctors and planners, don't really need the World Health Organization to tell them what to do. The World Health Organization has to provide advice for 190 plus countries. So for a country like Australia that has strong domestic capacity, it is rightly making its own decisions based on its own analysis, its own data, its own examination of domestic realities. World Health Organization should not be dictating policy to Australia or the US. And frankly, I can't think of a single example or situation in which the US or Australia listened to the World Health Organization or the UN on a matter of domestic policy. What the World Health Organization is there functionally to do is to support low and middle income countries. For example, a number of the countries in our region, Papua New Guinea, Indonesia, etc., to support them in their response. Because ultimately, if the countries in our region have strong health systems and are able to respond to this outbreak, that will benefit Australia.
So then in terms of those benefits, what does that freezing of funding from the United States mean for the World Health Organization's efforts to control the pandemic and to support these low and middle income countries?
So that's where this is quite scary. And it's worth noting that this reduction in funding or cutting of funding by the U.S. is also in the context of the U.S. government being $200 million in arrears in funding the World Health Organization. So while this is presented as a new thing, in many ways, this is actually a continuing trend of the U.S. and in particular the Trump administration underfunding and undersupporting the U.N. system. But what this means in the context of COVID is that the World Health Organization will be less able to ensure testing, to support governments with their own isolation and quarantining, to support health workers in low and middle income countries in order to prevent the spread of COVID-19. So what we might see are rates of COVID-19 in some of our neighboring countries that are higher than they would be if the World Health Organization was fully funded. What also needs to be stated is that while all our attention is focused on COVID-19, there are still many other conditions out there that the World Health Organization is addressing: malaria, HIV, tuberculosis, maternal health, immunization, and so on. And some of those programs are going to be the ones that are most affected.
That is a really scary picture that you paint. And so, as you say, President Trump is looking to make the World Health Organization essentially a scapegoat for the debacle of the US response. And I can only assume that a review of this nature will last about as long as an election campaign. And it aligns with President Trump's other decisions to pull out and defund international institutions. But I know that you've argued in the past and in a blog last week that the World Health Organization has always been a political beast. Do you think you could elaborate on that?
Yeah, it's something that's really important for your listeners to understand, is that the UN or the World Health Organization, they're not companies, they're not organizations that are a law unto themselves. Their power, their mandate, their legal representation is based on membership. So they are made up of 190 countries. They are made up of Australia and Canada and Peru and Rwanda and every other country. They are the ones who determine the World Health Organization's actions, its leadership, they vote for the leaders, how their budget works, and so on. So when people blame the UN or blame the World Health Organization, they're essentially blaming the other countries in the world. And so the World Health Organization, from its founding, has been a political beast where there's been maneuvering for power, there's been lobbying for who's going to be the director. And we've seen lots of examples over the years where, for example, in 1978, there was a big push for health for all, but then that was undermined in the early 1980s by the US government, because the health for all push came from countries aligned with the ex-Soviet Union. And the US said, well, that sounds very communist-y, and so we can't support that. We're going to have what we called selective primary health care. And then the HIV response as well. The World Health Organization was very slow in the HIV response in the late 80s up to the mid-90s, partly because of US influence that didn't want to see the rights of pharmaceutical countries in the US undermined by a global push for HIV control. We've also seen the US and other Western aligned countries undermine the World Health Organization with the establishment of the Global Fund, Gavi, and other international agencies. In our own region here, we see that the regional directors of the World Health Organization's office in the Western Pacific, it's alternated between a South Korean director and a Japanese director, and a South Korean director and a Japanese director. And that's not because they're the only people in the region who are qualified. That's not to suggest that there are no Australians qualified to lead that organization in the Western Pacific region. It's because it's a political situation, there, a political agreement between those countries. So, you know, we can lament the fact that the WHO is a political animal, but it's been a political animal from its founding. And for most of its history, it's been a political animal that has been aligned with Western interests, including Australia's.
Okay, and with that in mind, you know, that it's always been political, even if it was hoped it could be a body for technical expertise. The geopolitics has kind of always been a factor. Now it is obviously politically expedient for some leaders to make us look over there, and guilty as charged, that's where we're looking. So to what extent is criticism of the World Health Organization right now valid? Do you think that its response in this pandemic has been appropriate?
It's a great question, Tasha. And while I acknowledge the political reality here, I've also in the past been very critical of the World Health Organization. I do not think it's a particularly well-performing body. I think it is very political. I think some of its responses to major outbreaks in the past have been very poor. In the Ebola outbreak of 2014, the World Health Organization actually had to fire its country directors in Guinea, Sierra Leone, and Liberia because of their inaction in the face of the Ebola outbreak. And there were a number of reviews that were undertaken of the World Health Organization in 2015, 2016, after the Ebola outbreak. And it led to a number of reforms of the World Health Organization that actually Tedros, the new director general, as of a year or two ago, has been implementing. Now, has the World Health Organization response been perfect? No, it has not. It has made some mistakes, but it is essentially trying to balance a origin country in China that has not been fully transparent in informing the world community about the outbreak, and it's been trying to get that balance right, and it's been towing a very tricky line where if the World Health Organization were to imply criticism of China, then China would have essentially shut down and not provided information. So it had to be supportive of China to try and encourage China to remain open and transparent, but that's an impossible line. So part of me is sympathetic to Tedros and the World Health Organization, but I'm also quite critical of the fact that they have made some wrong calls on ending international travel and promoting an earlier date for some of the isolation.
I think that's fair. We are inclined in a scenario like this one to really focus on the mistakes and the wrong calls that have been made. But as you've outlined and is becoming increasingly clear, the World Health Organization seems to, despite missteps, have done better than a lot of countries, including the United States, in this unprecedented crisis. So I wanted to ask you, you know, you mentioned some of the pandering to China that the World Health Organization and Dr. Tedros has been accused of. The United States is already in arrears for its contributions to the World Health Organization, and Beijing's financial contributions are paltry compared to the United States, but it appears to have wielded quite significant influence at the World Health Organization through a coalition of countries from the global south. What do you think about China's role at the World Health Organization, and to what extent has it maybe been filling a vacuum left by Western countries?
I think that's exactly right, Natasha. You can't lament when other people step up and take on a leadership role when you have spent the last 10 years undermining yourself and withdrawing. You have to be at the table in order to eat at the table. If you're not at the table, then you end up being on the menu. I think there's a quote from somebody. And in the situation, and this is true of Australia as well, Australia has been withdrawing from the international system. It has cut aid by a huge amount over the last decade. Funding to the World Health Organization by Australia has been cut from, well, down to $20 million about 4 or 5 years ago. Now it's about $12 million a year. So whereas the US puts in $400 million, Australia puts in $12 million a year. So if you underfund an organization and it underperforms, and then you say, oh, well, you've underperformed, we have to reduce funding further, and then it underperforms, and then you argue for reducing funding. That's essentially what's happening here. Countries are disengaging, underfunding, and then lamenting the poor performance. And in an environment in which each country gets a vote, China has stepped up. It has encouraged its allied countries to vote with it, to influence with it. And they've stepped into a void that has been created by the US, Australia, and others. And so it's really a problem of our own making.
That's fair, if not depressing. But I think I will say that, you know, I study public opinion, and in countries like Australia and the United States, sentiment towards China has been declining constantly. And so constant praise from the World Health Organization for China's response, like when Dr. Tedros has said China was setting a new standard for outbreak control and commended it for its openness to sharing information, I think that won't be received well in a lot of countries, and perhaps won't help countries that are, or at least bureaucrats that are trying to make a case for increasing funding to the World Health Organization. But I also wanted to ask you another question related to China at the World Health Organization. We've seen a lot of focus on the experience of Taiwan in managing COVID-19. It was initially predicted to be the second worst hit country in the world and is now being lauded for having contained the virus to around 400 cases with minimal restrictions and shutdowns. Taiwan has been able to participate as an observer at the World Health Assembly in the past, but China has not allowed that to happen since 2016. The World Health Organization has been criticized for this, but you did say that these are the decisions of member states. So how does China make this happen? Is this up to the World Health Organization? What do you think?
So the Taiwan-China debate discussion obviously goes beyond the World Health Organization. This is a large geopolitical situation. We like to think that health supersedes politics. But what we have to understand here is that politics trumps health. That's unfortunate for someone who's head of a school of public health. That's unfortunate, but it's a reality, and we all acknowledge that. I think Taiwan should be involved in these discussions, because if there's an outbreak in Taiwan and it's not involved, it's not engaged, that's only going to impact. We see how there aren't any borders anymore between countries. So every country in the world, every entity in the world, every jurisdiction, whatever you want to call it, to be politically correct in this environment and not to offend, has to be involved in the World Health Assembly, in the World Health Organization. And we have a lot to learn from Taiwan. They've done a tremendous job using data, controlling their population, understanding movement, and they've been a model for the response. They should be lauded for it. They should be acknowledged for it. And we can't be, in the face of COVID-19, we can't be sheepish about talking about the success of a place like Taiwan, because we wonder if it might offend some other country. That's just not on.
I couldn't agree more. And I have argued in the past that it doesn't seem like Taiwan needs the World Health Organization, but the World Health Organization needs Taiwan. And I think that is becoming more evident in this crisis. But look, there's been a lot of questions about whether China has captured the World Health Organization. The more important question to my mind is, what do we need to do, not what has happened? 5 years ago, you wrote a piece that was entitled, "Do We Need the World Health Organization?" So is now the time to attack this organization?
So there's been calls by Australian politicians for a review of the World Health Organization. And absolutely, in the aftermath of Ebola, there were myriad reviews by various organizations, internal to the WHO, academic institutions, et cetera, et cetera. There will be a lot of reviews of the WHO's response to COVID-19, Australia's response to COVID-19, New South Wales' response to COVID-19, everybody's response to COVID-19. We will have lots of reviews happening, and that's right. That's exactly what we should do. The review of the World Health Organization will be very critical and will be a very important undertaking, and Australia is right to call for a review. The fact is, the pandemic is still escalating in a number of countries. So starting to withdraw resources to review things, it's not the right time right now. And important to note as well, Natasha, is that Australia conducts a multilateral assessment every few years anyway. They do this routinely. There was one in 2014 or 2015. They're undertaking one now. They review multilateral institutions for their effectiveness, for their alignment with Australian strategy, and that helps determine Australian funding for these organizations. So there are systems for this. I think some of these politicians coming out of the shadows to critique the WHO and call for reviews, they should let DFAT and others do their jobs. There will be a time to review the WHO, but it's not today.
I think the question that hasn't really been answered by the many critics of the World Health Organization is who would lead the global response if not that organization? What do you think?
So as I've said, I've critiqued WHO in the past, and I have written a blog that said, do we need the WHO? And despite my many criticisms and many people's many criticisms, at the end of the day, I think we all realize that if we did abolish the WHO, we'd need to recreate something that looked remarkably similar right after. And that's the challenge that faces us. It still plays a role. It has a vital role, and we do need something like it.
Look, Joel, I am inclined to agree with you on this one. We are in the midst of a once-in-a-generation pandemic, and I think there will be a time to hold the World Health Organization, President Trump, and everybody else accountable. But it would seem that the time is not now. And if there is an upside to the kind of look-over-here tactics that you've raised, I think it is the possibility that countries will see a stronger and better-funded global health infrastructure as essential to the future of global health and public health outcomes. So we'll see what happens there. I really want to thank you again, Joel, for joining me for today's discussion on the World Health Organization, geopolitics, and COVID-19.
Thank you very much for the opportunity, Natasha.
COVIDcast is a limited edition weekly podcast from the Lowy Institute. I'd like to thank my colleagues, Sandra Rigby and Jennifer Reinhart, for production assistance. Please keep an eye on our social media channels for details of the next episode of COVIDcast, and you can stay up to date with all the latest developments on coronavirus via the Lowy Institute's widely read digital magazine, The Interpreter. Thank you all for listening today, and we'll catch up with you again next week.